Happy Sunday, everyone. Welcome to the smartest guy in the room. None of us are the smartest guy in the room today. We got the host, Jerry Dempsey, otherwise known as Demps, and John Matthew Smith, otherwise known as Otis. What's going on, buddy?
What is going on today? It's Sunday, and it's a really nice day, and I don't have any plans. I went to Taste of Buffalo yesterday, and I ate like I had just gotten out of a Viet Cong prison. Thankfully, the portions there are kind of small, which in a way I was happy about because I ate a lot, but in a way I was pissed about because they make you buy tickets and then you get the food with the tickets, and the sheets of tickets are, they're like $6 for a sheet, and they come in 10 tickets on each sheet. But like, if you want something decent, it's like 8 tickets. You know, if you want like, some chicken dish from some, you know, food truck, it's, they charge you 8 or 10 tickets, and, you kind of end up spending a lot of money. So I don't know.
Did you end up with extra tickets is really my question.
No. Oh, you know what I did too? As we walked the festival, I kept my eyes on the ground looking for tickets on the ground, and I found a total of 6 of them. So, that allowed me to get an alcoholic beverage because the alcoholic beverages were all like 12 to 14 tickets. And that was that's a lot of tickets to give up. So,
yeah.
So I was pretty strategic in the food I selected because I wanted to spread my tickets out, because you got to buy tickets before you can do anything there. And I bought $42 worth. I bought 7 sheets. That's a lot of money, man. You know, and
can you put a price on a good time? Did you have a good time?
I did. And it wasn't too hot out, and yeah, I had a good time. So,
did you go into the Mulligan's Brick Bar?
No, I didn't. You know, they're doing a shitload of construction on Allen Street since I've moved back, and you can't really make your way down there, and it sucks because there's a lot of places I want to go to, and everything's been blocked off for the last 3 or 4 months since I've been back. But this is my favorite time of year because last week or 2 weeks ago it was the Allentown Art Festival, and which is all on Delaware really, and yesterday was Taste of Buffalo, and summer's going by quickly. Though I realized it's already almost mid-July, so
I hear you there, buddy. It's hot as balls down here. I had this tree I bought last year. It's like called a Red Dawn. It's a redwood from Asia. And it's still a baby. And this spring, I thought it died over the winter. And, you know, I started watering it in the springtime, and it was really looking good. And I don't know, I stopped paying attention to it about 2 weeks ago. And all of a sudden, I looked at it yesterday, and it was half dead. I'm really fucking upset. So I watered the hell out of it.
What kind of tree was it?
It's called a Red Dawn. It's in the redwood family. And it's a really cool looking tree. They're all over the place down here in North Carolina. They're from Asia. It's like an Asian redwood, but they're really pretty. Some people think they're ugly, but I like them. Anyway, I hope I get it back to health because I feel like a failure. You know.
Do you remember the movie Red Dawn?
Is that with Dolph Lundgren?
No, this is with Patrick Swayze, C. Thomas Howell, all these like 80s young adult and teen movie stars, Leah Thompson. It's like it was a movie about like 9 high school kids in Colorado who took on and defeated an invading Russian force.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it. I don't think I ever saw it though.
There was actually a story about 2 weeks ago in what passes for the legitimate media now about how what Red Dawn could teach us about an effective insurgency in the Ukraine.
It sounds like, and you use the word legitimate in that sentence.
Look, Ed, the only reason the insurgency was effective in Red Dawn was because of Patrick Swayze.
He was pretty hot.
Patrick Swayze was the key link to what happened in Red Dawn, Roadhouse, the Outlaws, the Outsiders. And now that America doesn't have Swayze anymore, we're fucked.
Yeah, we have Matt Dillon still and his brother. I loved his brother in Entourage. I have to say, he was my favorite character, Johnny Drama.
He was great.
He was fucking best. He was also good in Platoon.
Yeah, he was good in Platoon. There will never be another Patrick Swayze, though, because Patrick Swayze... See, the thing with Kevin Dillon is he's always in really good shows, usually. Mm-hmm. And he's very entertaining. Patrick Swayze made a career out of appearing in really fucking awful movies, but he made them worth watching.
Them up. Yeah, that's a good point.
Roadhouse was one of the dumbest, best movies ever to be made.
That's true. I've seen that movie like a lot. And, and every time I question my own sanity when I'm watching it, then I watch it anyway.
There's so many stupid lines in that movie, too.
I like the guy that had the knives in his boots. I always thought that was a good move. I will stab you while I'm kicking you.
He took being a really good bouncer so seriously.
And what is he, like 5'6"?
I don't know.
He wasn't very tall, I don't think. I still think the best thing he ever did was the Chippendale dancing with, you know, Tommy Boy.
Chris Farley.
Still, you know, that just transcends. I showed that clip to my son. And, dude, I thought I was going to have to resuscitate him because he couldn't breathe from laughing so hard.
You know, that was such a great skit. But now in this woke culture, not too long ago, I read a piece in some, I don't know what, it was like a magazine about, you know, how sad that skit was and how, you know, how we need to rethink that skit. Why do we need to rethink that skit? It happened.
I thought fat shaming was the only kind of shaming you could still get away with. Is that not true?
I love that you can't slut shame anymore. Like, you're supposed to reward sluts now.
Yeah, but I mean, it's confusing because prostitution is legal in Nevada. And I don't know why it's not legal everywhere. I mean, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Norm MacDonald, he put out a Netflix special that just came out a couple of weeks ago, and he recorded it right before he died. And he did it from his house. It was like during the pandemic, and he was going in for a procedure, and he wasn't sure how much longer he was going to live because he kept his illness secret from everybody.
Right.
So he cut this special from like his desk in his house and during the pandemic. So it's kind of weird when you watch it because it's just him in front of his computer and there's no audience or anything like this, but it's really funny still. And he does this bit on slut shaming, and he talks about how he was way ahead of the curve when it came to, you know, being against slut shaming, because when he was growing up, he would tell all the sluts how great they were and, you know, make them feel good so they would keep being sluts.
Exactly.
It's just such a silly bit.
Well, all I know is, we had a theme about being a hypocrite back in the day, and it just seems like the only fashionable thing to do is be a hypocrite.
What do you mean?
Just our whole, I don't know if it's irony lived out on a daily basis. Just how I think a lot of people walk around just, you know, George Bush said it best, and I know you're going to hate me for saying that, but he said, we walk around wanting people to think the best of us while we think the worst of them, or something like that.
I have been noticing a lot of ironic behavior lately.
I mean, it's probably because of the media. So I'm going to jump right in. This is a good jumping in point. The water is warm. We're going to talk about the end of print today, which I know resonates one way or another with yourself. But the reason I thought it was a good topic or something I wanted to talk about was the other day in the mail, I got this giant catalog from Our House, which isn't spelled like two words, Our House. It's Arhaus, and it's a, you know, it's a big furniture store, right? It's what brand names eventually turned into, I guess, or one of them. But I got this fucking book. It was bigger than any of Gideon and or St. James Bibles put together. And it was all pictures of furniture, really expensive furniture and all kinds of shit. And you know what I did with it? I walked it over to the trash can and threw it in the fucking trash. And I get a lot of junk mail because I'm getting older. And I just started down this path, which always leads me to many different places. But I just thought, why the fuck in this world of green economy and green new deals and green fucking everything, why the fuck are we something so easy that you could slam dunk like, hey, let's get rid of junk mail. You know, we don't do shit about it. So we could take this story any way we want to take it, buddy. But that's where I started on my little path. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's different ways to slice this monkey, but first of all, junk mail accounts for about 92% of all the mail I get. I rarely get any mail that matters anymore. It's probably the mail that actually matters. I probably get emails or shit like that, but I get a ton of junk mail. And, you know, it's like everything else. It's capitalism. There's still money that is being made through direct mail, direct junk mail. And it's being made on a lot of different ends. You know, I did a story when I was a journalist about 20 years ago about how lucrative it was for New York State to sell all of our personal information to third parties who then use it for junk mail. You know, at the time, the state was bringing in like something like $51 million a year just selling our personal information to various industries who turned it into direct mailing. You know, So I think as long as there is money still being made, you know, the direct mail industry or other industries that you're right, you would think we'd do away with because we're always talking out the other side of our mouth about reducing waste and going green. You know, it seems like a no-brainer. But I think as long as there's money still being made, and I think there's a lot of parties making money in the direct mail industry. It's not just the industries doing the mailings. I think that's the big reason you're not seeing it. But go away.
I mean, there has to be. Right. Because like you just said, the U.S. mail, the bulk of what they deliver day in, day out is now junk mail.
Right? Yeah. It's probably what's sustaining the post office. Right.
You know, without doing the numbers, back in the day, they were like the cash cow that all the other agencies raided from. You know, they were the Peter that was getting robbed to pay Paul, so to speak. But now, with companies like, no offense, the FedExes, the DHLs, and all them, I mean, they took business away from post office. But then, with the invention of electronic mail and other shit, everything being online, that's a slam to their business. I pay all my bills online, you know, and I say this stupid shit forever, but no one believes me. I had an electronic banking account, Matthew, in 1996. Okay.
Really?
Yeah, because I was an internet dork and sold technology. You know, and we used to tout like, oh, we're, you know, the end of the paperless offices. Do you know the use of paper in offices has actually like quintupled since the fucking late 90s? Since people started using the World Wide Web.
You mean the use of paper has gone up?
Correct.
Well, I think I'm one of the people responsible for that because every single day I kill a lot of trees. I do a lot of editing and, you know, the work that I do on a computer, when it comes to editing, I insist on printing everything off into a hard copy because I'm a more effective editor that way if I'm reading it off hard copy than if I'm reading it off a screen. And a lot of times I'm editing a piece 4, 5, 6 times after revisions. So if a piece is 4 pages, I'm often making 24 to 28, you know, page copies until I'm done editing that.
You know, I find that interesting, Matt, and it just speaks to the dichotomy of man. I always reference, when people ask me, what the fuck does that mean? I always reference that movie Full Metal Jacket where the kid goes, you know, fighting for peace is like fucking for virginity. It just seems like, you know, in a world where we are blowing through the resources on this planet, like a collaborative drunken sailor on a bender, you know, we would like 40, like, almost half the trees that get harvested go into making paper. Not building houses or doing anything like making Punjab sticks or something with them, but just fucking paper. And then it all ends up in the landfill. I mean, it's kind of scary to me.
Now, yeah, but to me, I'm not using the paper I'm using serves a purpose. You know, I have to make sure what leaves my hands is perfect. I can't risk having, you know, costly errors in a piece. So, you know, I'm going to print out on hard copy because I need to edit these pieces thoroughly and as perfectly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen on a screen. So
that is very interesting. Well, and you speak to like a lot of things that in life people say, I need this piece of paper. So like, you know, I watch a lot of Ancient Aliens and those fucking guys before papyrus or whatever, they didn't have paper. So what they do, they just carve shit into the side of a mountain or made little paintings or petroglyphs or, you know, maybe we should go back to that. I'm just being ass, but...
You know, we started talking about this, I think, because you were not only contemplating the direct mail you receive, but you were talking about how, and you read it. You read an awful lot. You read way more than I do, but you were talking about how you don't even remember the last time you bought a hard copy book. Everything you buy is on Audible.
Correct.
I've never bought anything on Audible. So you and I are different there, but like, what's your philosophy there?
I mean, I'm going back to, you know, I grew up on the internet and I've always been in IT sales since the dawn of my career. And to me, it's about efficiency. And it's about, like, again, from a reading point of view, I do a lot of walking. I walk at like 5 miles a day. So for me, while I'm walking, I plug in my headphones to my, you know, to my iPhone. And now I'm listening to a book. And there are times I want to run, you know, I listen to a lot of not just like romance novels and stuff. There's a place for that. But I listen to just like I just listened to Sam Harris's book, The Moral Landscape. And for those that don't know, Sam Harris is a big time atheist, little pompous. He's gotten into some good battles with Jordan Peterson about the uselessness of God and all that. But the point I'm making is there are times I want to go home and write stuff down, and I'll use a fair amount of paper because I like to I like to write things down that I know I need to remember. But to me, the value is locking it in my head and making it, you know, a living, breathing tool that I can use, whether I'm educating myself or trying to understand the world or educating my kids. Just to read a book, I suffer from constant daydreaming. And if it's a good book, it'll send my mind in 10 different directions. So, you know, the time I will waste paper, now here comes the hypocrite part, is when I'm writing things down that I know I want to remember to be able to use them in my life. And that's where the usefulness, like you said, it's useful to you when you're editing to not make mistakes, to see it in print and to go through it line item by line item to make sure there's no fucked up words or whatever you're looking for, right? I understand that. But for me, the takeaway is more, I have to write it down because that way it locks it into my brain, especially if it's harder concept to grasp or if it's just something esoteric that I haven't really understood or dealt with before in my life. It's very long-winded, sorry.
Well, it's interesting because I'm very reliant still on print and paper, and but yet all of the notes I make on my phone, I make them in notes, mm-hmm. because that way they're always with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like, oh, I left that notebook at home, or, you know, my phone is always with me. So I make notes constantly all day long on a variety of different things. And it's weird. I do that on my phone as much as I hate and try to fight this idea of, you know, print is dead. Because I'm really concerned about that. You know, I had that affect my livelihood, you know, because I was in newspapers. And, you know, print is dead in newspapers. That much is true. You know, you've had so many big city newspapers go under, and that led to the loss of thousands of reporting jobs, which I don't think is, you know, ultimately good for democracy. And when you change the way an art form, and let's just call it, for sake of argument or this discussion, journalism and art form, when you change the way an art form is delivered, you also change the way it's produced. And, you know, I know as a professional writer, there's a difference between writing for print and writing for the web or writing for a digital, you know, platform.
What is the difference? That's interesting.
You know, you have to be really snappy. You have to be really concise and short. You know,
on print or on the web?
On the web. It's an industry standard. And, you know, when it comes to something like journalism, you lose a lot. You lose a narrative and an authoritative voice. You know, what you see it's not the norm. And it's impacted investigative journalism dramatically. And like, you know, that whole being snappy and being, that's one reason why you have clickbait now, you know? So, you know, it's on the other hand, I was doing some research for this and I was pleased to see that book sales, printed book sales, has actually increased, which, you know, I was relieved to see that. And one of the interesting things is one of the things that's driving the increase in printed book sales last year, book sales were up almost 9%, was young adult novels, which increased 30%, which means that younger people, you would think, are more apt to read things on the internet, but younger people are buying things in print, and that was good to see. And graphic novels were up 109%, and again, that's a younger audience. So,
what is graphic novel, like Twilight or something?
No, graphic novels are the way I'm not going to describe it correctly, but I'm going to describe it in a way that is, it's a really sophisticated comic book in a way.
Got it.
They're novels, but they rely heavily on a graphic illustration presentation. And I mean, I'm not really into them. I've looked at a couple of them and they're fantastic. They're very attractive pieces of art. And, the one reason too, I don't do Audible is because when you read a printed book, you develop, and everyone is different. It's like when you hear a song and you don't really know what the song is about, and 100 people will listen to that same song and they'll all take away something different from that song.
Yep.
When you read a book, as opposed to listening to a book, you're creating in your head your own version of the narrator's voice and the narrator's tone. And you're probably taking something away from that book that's different than what I might be taking away from it. But if you hear it, an audio book, you're listening to the narrator and you're listening to their tone. And I think that influences the emotion you're feeling and what you're taking away from it, as opposed to creating that tone in your own head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but these are all my takes on the issue of print is dead. Print is definitely dead in journalism. I'm glad to see, and I was surprised to see, that it's not the case yet in books, although, hey, capitalism is always going to win, right? But capitalism sometimes chips away at the culture, like bookstores and shit like that,
Well, it goes back to my philosophy of the range, right? Or the bell curve. I invented that, too much, bad. Too little, not good. And, I like reading books. I always did as a kid. To me, it's a matter of convenience. And quite frankly, I'll say to my laziness, to sit on my couch and hold a paperback up, makes my hand tired, makes my eyes tired. I'm fucking lazy. I can put the headphones in and I can listen to a story. I listened to a Ray Bradbury thing, because I always wanted to listen to him or read one of his books, and never really got around to, was it Fahrenheit, whatever. But I always heard there's you see those lists of here's 100 books everybody should read. And I always kind of say bullshit to that. But then I'll go look at the list anyway and go, oh, I read a lot of these. And I'll feel good.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I never looked at those lists, but I looked at those lists a couple months ago and I bought a bunch of books on that list, the 100 books every man should read, and that's why I bought Art of War and stuff like that.
Well, just to dovetail off that, when we were talking about billionaires last week, and we didn't talk about Mark Cuban a ton, but I think we both agreed he's kind of someone that we look up to. I was just reading about him somewhere in a magazine article or some crap, and I noticed he had a reading list. What is Mark Cuban reading this summer? It was a few years ago. And I looked at it, and something that popped off the list for me was a book called Our Mathematical Universe. And my kids are real smart, and I want them to be even smarter and have a love of math and science and that whole STEM thing. So I thought this is a good book to read. A guy by the name of Max Tegmark, who's actually become one of my favorite authors all of a sudden, just because I read an article about Mark Cuban, who told me to read that book. And that's why I like the kind of the hit and miss of life. You're wandering on a path, you don't know where the fuck you're going, and then you just go to the path less taken. And I think you and I are both on that. And again, I'm not against, I try to be as green as possible, and I don't recycle as much as I probably should. We're actually, we're working on that in my household right now, being better at, getting rid of all the cans and bottles and not putting them in the trash. Because I do feel, I have an awareness now to just the green world. And you could mock some politicians. I'm not going to go either way on this. But at the end of the day, if someone has a good idea and it resonates and there's common sense involved, then, you know, it should be, that idea should be cleaned up and taken to the next level. And when I see, you know, I look around just my life, I'm like, we waste a lot of fucking paper. I mean, we get Amazon deliveries all the time in my house, and I always break up. I mean, it's part of my rituals. I break up the boxes and I take them to dump and I make sure they go in the right place. And I actually get excited about that, even as dorky as that might sound.
You love the dump.
I'm telling you, man. We actually canceled our garbage service because it was really expensive. And I'm like, dude, the dump is like two miles from my house. And I'll just take all my stuff there. It's like a few hundred dollars a month, maybe $1,000 a year. I don't know. But I mean, who cares? I like saving money. It's exciting.
My wife is a real big... Well, first of all, do you think that you have become more environmentally aware because of what you've been doing with your life the last decade or so, which buying land and renting it out to farmers and that kind of
thing? I'm more in tune with the world, for sure. Having kids has been a component of that. But before I had kids, I mean, I lived like a homeless guy who had a nice apartment. Like, I had no food in my apartment. My carbon footprint was like almost zero. But then when you have a family, you're buying shit all the time, you know, and everything's throwaway these days. So to your point, or to answer your question, I would say there's a lot of sawdust making that pile.
I have just not evolved. And maybe I should be more ashamed of this, but I've just not evolved environmentally. And again, I said this before when we talked about green issues, you know, I'm not throwing shit out my car window as I drive down the street or dumping gas in my backyard, you know, but I'm not ultra aware of the environment like other people are in this day and age. And my wife is a very big green person, and you know, she's always correcting my mistakes. Like, she's always pulling shit out of the garbage that I've thrown in the garbage and stuff like that. And making sure it gets to the right place in the recycling bin, or I don't know what it is with me where I'm just not clicking on that issue.
Well, I'll tell you what, in terms of paper, I don't care if we are going to just keep making it, but what we need to legalize, and maybe, you know, with all your government contacts, you can work on this, but making the growing of hemp, not just a legal idea, but really driving that market. The shit is like amazing. All the things you can do with hemp. And I don't mean the smoking weed part of it, or even the CBD oil fun stuff. I'm talking about hemp that you can make concrete out of, the hemp that you can make paper out of, and a ton of other industrial products that are, you know, I don't mean the paper straws at Starbucks that suck, by the way, either.
Oh, God. Can we, you know,
those are awful.
You know what? I pledge to be the biggest environmentalist on every single front if we can just get away from those fucking paper straws, you know?
Yep. I had one the other day, and it like went limp faster than,
oh Jesus,
and Jerry in a whorehouse.
They're gross in your mouth, and you know.
I don't think those are made of hemp though, because hemp's not legal at a national level. And you know, part of,
so fucking stupid.
Part of me, when I bought that land, I bought like a bunch of acreage out in the country. Was I wanted to grow hemp on it? I was going to work with this farmer dude, and we were going to grow hemp. And he ixnayed it because he's like, dude, fucking government's going to screw us. I'm going to stick to growing soybeans. So I sold the land back to him.
Just ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. I don't know much about the hemp industry, but I agree that, you know, the restrictions on hemp, they're puritanical and they're ridiculous and they make no sense.
It's awful. I see no point to it. The only argument I've heard, and it's a half-baked argument, is the dogs that are sniffing out other drugs can't tell the difference. And if I pull you over and you're stoned to the bejesus, let's say I'm a cop, I can't just do like a BAC, like a breathalyzer on you. Like, I can't tell how fucked up you are. Yeah. Are you a Willie Nelson or are you a Snoop Dogg? You know,
everybody is fucking stoned now. When I was yesterday at the Taste of Buffalo Festival, just walking down the street, that's all you smelled was in the air was.
Did you get a contact high?
Well, the shit was like more. You could smell that more than you could smell the food being cooked, you know?
And who's to say that's wrong? Like, what the fuck? I don't care. People want to get stoned. I mean, we're all grown ups. I was just looking at Quora. It's like this Q&A website. It's awful too, but it's a little better than a Facebook or I guess, or a Twitter. But some lady posed a question about how to get her kid to stop masturbating. And she got like viscerally attacked by all these people, which, and rightfully so. I'm like, why would you fucking, and like she barged into like a 15-year-old kid's bedroom, caught him jerking off. You know, and she's like, my son's going to hell. It's like, no, you should go to an insane asylum, you fucking weirdo. Why are you, leave your kid alone. Let him spank it.
Yeah. Maybe he was reading Playboy in a print form.
Well, he's probably used a lot of tissue paper, so.
You know, well, you know, one of the reasons too, just to go back to our subject, one of the reasons I never use audiobooks or have gone that way is reading too is like the only time where I'm detaching from my phone or my laptop, you know, like, so if I start using my phone now to, I'll never put my phone down if I don't, you know, because when I pick up a book, that's my way of getting away from the phone.
Tell you what, you want people to talk to you on an airplane? Start reading a book. They start asking you a million questions and you're like, I'm fucking reading.
I heard a story this week about the guy who invented like the cell phone or the technology for the cell phone or whatever. And, he was shocked because he never uses like a cell phone, and he was shocked to learn that the average person spends an average of 5 hours a day on their cell phone. And his reaction was, people need to get a life.
Yeah, I think I saw that too. It's always those people. Like, it's like Oppenheimer when he created the atomic bomb. He's like, oh, what have I done? It's just like that. That's not even hyperbole.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, hey, I have an HOA emergency. I'm going to have to go. Yeah, something at our front entrance, there's water flying everywhere, and no one else knows how to turn it off, so I guess I got to run down there and do it.
Maybe it's that 15-year-old kid masturbating.
Stop treating your body like an amusement park, will you?
All right, big dog.
Hey, you have a great weekend, buddy.
Stay free. Bye.